we move the last case forward. Is that counsel? Okay. 97-19, State of Ohio versus Shekinda Sally. In this case, Justice Resnick has recused herself, and we're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick. Judge Julius Frischley is a judge of the Court of Appeals, City of the 11th District. Welcome. Mr. Gamso.
Shows that she was in an abusive relationship for sure, but does in this case which I think differs from some of the other cases where battered women's syndrome testimony was helpful or would have been helpful. In some of those cases, the scenario was that there was no testimony about imminent danger of serious physical harm, you know, i.e. the spouse was asleep, okay? But here, do you even need, did counsel need further testimony in as much as, in this case, the defendant was, her testimony was that it was purely self-defense, was being attacked, and she gets a gun. She says it was an accident, but then she says self-defense. So do you need the syndrome? Would evidence of a syndrome be more helpful here?
Yes.
In what way?
And here's why. Mm-hmm. Here's why. Let's go. The problem is that this is a case of credibility. I believe her. If you believe her, the jury believes her story, what she has told, then she's not guilty. If the jury doesn't believe her, and they didn't, they find her guilty. They struggled with this for a day by the standard of Lucas County on one count. That's a long time. And they came down on the side of not believing her, obviously. Over here, she's not guilty. Because her credibility was the question, was her story credible? Those things which impugn her credibility, the fact that she behaved in ways which are counterintuitive to the understanding, to the common understanding, which is what this court said
please specific and direct. The answer to the question is you're saying it would have helped her in that the other testimony about her being violent at times would have been ameliorated by testimony that she was suffered from the battered women's syndrome. Is that what's your purpose? Because it doesn't have anything to do with the scenario that day, the day of the killing.
It's not about what happened at that time, except
All right.
so far as her credibility.
Well, you want an expert to bolster her credibility, but the only thing the expert was going to be able to say is this is how folks with this condition behave. He could not say that she, you know, the things occurred the way she said that they occurred,
no.
right?
No, what he can say is, what the expert can say is, what she has told you what the prosecutor said is not worthy of belief. Those things are, in fact, reasonable. Those are the ways that a certain category of battered women do, in fact, behave. And therefore, when you have been told that your common understanding can't accept this and she must be lying about that, it's a bizarre behavior, and if you think she's lying about that after you believe anything else she said, well, maybe she's lying about that. The expert obviously can't answer that question. But the expert can say it's not, in fact, behavior that is altogether bizarre and unheard of. This is the way.
What behavior was counterintuitive? Mm-hmm. What behavior was bizarre?
Staying with this man over a period of
time. No. As to the incident.
Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that the behavior at the time of the incident was bizarre, was counterintuitive. It's the larger package of behavior. It's the package of behavior out of which the incident arrived that affects her underlying credibility. If you're told this witness is a liar, everything she says is not worthy of belief, then it
It's used in the battered women cases. When they talk about counterintuitive behavior, they're talking about the moment of the act of homicide. That why would a woman standing beside a bed when her husband walks in the door, blow him away without any apparent provocation, and yet she's saying she knew he was drunk and he was going to beat the beans out of her, and so she shot him. Where's our counterintuitive behavior here? She says, he's choking me, he's beating me up, we're having this violent argument, I'm running around the house, he's chasing me, I happen upon this gun, I pick it up, I point it at him, and he keeps coming at me. Hey, you're home free if they believe it.
If they believe it, yes, that's right.
What's counterintuitive about their response if she in fact even admitted that she pulled the trigger at that point?
I'm not saying that event, that her behavior at the time of that event is counterintuitive. That's not our argument. That's not good.
Well, but then how do you say battered woman syndrome applies, because that's what it is talking about?
The whole package of things that she does that involve her and keep her in this abusive relationship over a long period of time that the prosecutor says you can't believe her over. That's the counterintuitive part. She didn't seek medical attention one time. She didn't call the cops. She didn't do all those things that, in fact, many battered women do not do. She was sometimes the aggressor. She wasn't this wimpy little...
But this may have been recreational violence. That may have been the pattern of the relationship. She may not have been a battered woman in terms of the end result.
And when you have this testimony, which following up Judge Chrisley's comments, when you have this sort of scenario that is presents the culpable behavior, which is a killing, I mean, battered women syndrome has to still eventually, the testimony has to relate to the events of that moment, not of the, it just so happens it often includes, here's this person who's had a difficult life, which I think is what you would like to have in the case, but it has, nevertheless, doesn't it have to get to, and at that point, here is why the behavior, the shooting, is not culpable. Or is self-defense, or is something, but it's not just that, it can't be just a overall viewpoint about the defendant, can it?
I do not see in our cases, in the statute, I don't see the law that says that precisely.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it does affect that moment, since was there a fight, did in fact these things occur, but it's true that if you accept her explanation of that moment, if you take the event of the killing, rip it completely out of the context of everything else that had happened. This is a simple self-defense case. I say he was trying to kill me and I was in fear of my life. The jury doesn't buy it. The problem is that it doesn't occur out of that context. It occurs in, arises from that context. And if what that context teaches, if what that context leads the average, ordinary, reasonable juror through their common understanding to believe, is that you can't believe anything that's then,
so you continue to just give us broad, you know, broad statements about that this would help her credibility, and that never, in my understanding, has been the basis for offering battered women syndrome expert testimony.
If you want to answer that,
mm-hmm. It's really, go ahead and answer the case question.
Yeah.
It may be that we're trying to expand the range of possible.
Okay.
Are you, don't say this, but I think I thought in your brief, but are you concerned that the jury thinks that, well, this has been a violent relationship and this woman should have left it and she didn't leave it and so now see what happens, she shoots her husband, that the jury is thinking that and that's why you want the battered woman syndrome expert testimony to show she didn't leave it because battered woman syndrome, and that's really what you're concerned about. Is that, I say you don't argue that, but it seems to me that has to be a rationale for.
It's tied into it, certainly. She didn't leave because this is what happened. She didn't call the police because this is what happened. She acted as she did because this is what happens. And based on the fact that this is what happens, rather than what the prosecutor said, which is, this isn't what happens, you can't believe any of this, she's got a response to that that's available through the statute, available through the case law, available through the literature and experts, and that her attorneys never attempted to put on for what we submit no rational reason whatsoever.
That's really the issue. Ineffective assistant counsel is really the issue.
That's how we get to that.
Okay.
In your review of the cases, I had the same concern, I guess, that Judge Chrisley does. There's nothing counter about the event. there's nothing counterintuitive about what she did. I mean, they have a violent encounter, and they had a violent, and he's choking her, and she shoots him. I mean, that's not terribly counterintuitive. I guess I'm wondering how many cases that you've come across is a battered woman syndrome used in that situation versus the situation that Judge Christie referred to, where there's no violence, but the woman kills her husband or the man because of the history of violence.
It's essentially impossible to put on that defense, battered woman defense, in a case where out of nowhere, when no event is occurring, the woman kills someone without an expert.
You could finish your answer if you like.
What we're suggesting is that there's another category of cases, and it's a fairly small category, frankly, where it is equally necessary, but for a somewhat different set of reasons, to put on an expert. Not because there is a definitive, incontestable situation that makes no sense. But for those reasons, history makes sense. And history is key to everything.
Well, you want to give her a scientific reason why she went for the gun to begin with.
I would like to make one available when there is one that is in fact available.
Well, if he's choked her and he's still coming at her, what scientific reason do you need for her to defend herself? She's a woman, he's a man, and all those things. Why does she need some scientific explanation to explain why she gets the gun to defend herself?
She does. And if I misspoke, I apologize.
Well, it's a good point.
I don't mean to suggest that she needs a scientific reason.
Expert. Well,
for grabbing the gun while she's in the closet, turning around and holding it, rather than a scientific explanation to explain how she got there in the first place. How did this moment arise? We have an answer to that question, to how it could have possibly arisen. The jury was basically told, no, it couldn't have happened. We can't believe that. We could never have gotten here. Nobody would have gotten here. But yeah, people do get there. And that's what experts can say. And when you knew, you had to know that that's what was coming.
Thank you, Mr. Ganso. Mr. Pearson.
Tragic incidents, and the like.
Well, sir, let's just say the target ditched the negative. That was the
because when, as soon as you say it never happened because she didn't do X, Y, and Z, and there's no evidence, then you need the expert to say, there is no evidence because these type of women don't go to sleep. These type of women don't need relationships. So by the very fact that you chose to challenge her credibility about her past, didn't that put battered woman syndrome at issue in the present?
It wasn't the point of staying in challenging the credibility, challenging the credibility. It was basically raising an argument, intention of recent fabrication, the existence of any of these things, as opposed to saying, the state was not saying, this woman really couldn't have been this scared of this fellow, and these events probably occurred, but they weren't really serious, and she's claiming now a trial, because if it worked, she would have left. That's not what the state's position was, and that was the import of many of the cross-examination for the arguments made by the state at trial. What they were actually saying was, we don't believe that these events even occurred, because she didn't report them, she didn't see them.
And that is exactly my point.
But what the...
Don't report these things. That's the whole point. By putting that stuff in issue, then if you went after her past, you put her past in issue. And isn't she entitled to defend her past because you're now attacking it?
Well, she might have been able to defend it. Well, in terms of whether it occurred or not, I certainly would think so, in terms of whether she was true or harassed. But in terms of the syndrome itself, I think we're talking about two different things. The syndrome itself, the most important thing about the syndrome itself, has to do with the impact that it has on the individual suffering and the psychological impact at the time of the incident of the battery incident that gives rise to specific criminality or blame. But what you intended,
what the prosecutor intended by the cross-examination is irrelevant. It's what actually took place then, and what he brought out that necessitated an answer. It sounds like the prosecutor opened the door for the defendant to bring in this battered woman syndrome because of the type of questions he asked and because of the type of inferences that the jury was drawing from his questioning. Whether he intended it or not is immaterial.
Until the prosecutor
started questioning the credibility of this woman, there may not have been, but didn't he create by his questions the impression that it was unnecessary for this woman to shoot this man? And didn't he then, by creating that illusion, create the necessity of showing why the defendant acted as she did, namely bringing in expert testimony to testify to the fact that this is exactly how people act in this situation?
The prosecutor wasn't raising the issue of battered woman syndrome to knock it down. The prosecutor was questioning the credibility of her claim.
I'm not saying he raised the issue. I'm saying that by his questioning, he created an issue of the actions of this person. And doesn't that, by accident, create the necessity of eliminating the inferences that were drawn by the answers to his questions? The defense attorney argued self-defense.
Yes, the state simply responded to the allegation made by the defense counsel by saying, well, he wasn't necessarily as aggressive as it made out to be. To try to rebut what she had raised as her defense.
In any event, doesn't all this discussion lead us to the issue that's before us? Not what it's going to show or what it didn't show. The issue is, should counsel have at least presented something pursuant to the statute in costs on her behalf? That's really our issue, isn't it? Okay, and if the issue is in the case and counsel doesn't do it, doesn't that make counsel ineffective?
The issue wasn't in the case.
No. By cross-examination, it certainly was.
Cross-examination was justified.
Peripherally there.
Okay. Prosecutor not questioning Cinder. Cinder was never an issue. As the state position of the entire jury in this case was one of civil self-defense. And that the defense brought in battered woman syndrome as the holster was straight.
And that's the
that
issue.
Begs
Isn't
the question.
That what this is about? Isn't that the issue? That counsel should have done that.
Well, then, in that case, I should be writing a different brief, and I acknowledge what we've written through the different brief and address the issue of how many specifics to raise a particular defense or a particular strategy in a particular case.
I don't know. I think counsel did that. That's what his proposition of law says.
His proposition of law is premised on the idea that this was better than the center of the case.
In order to find counsel ineffective here, is this court required to find that the defendant was truthful about her claims of, because the prosecution's view is this, her claims of prior abuse were not credible. Is counsel ineffective when it finds his own client lacks credibility on that? I mean, does that mean, should he have gone to get an expert if he has a problem with his client's being credible on her testimony? Should he go get an expert or not?
Well,
The issue is whether counsel should have done something about, should have, that a lawyer meeting the minimum standards should have engaged an expert to put forth a battered women's syndrome defense. It wasn't done here. That's the question. Do we have to presume here in order to get to a yes about ineffective assistance, don't we have to almost engage in a presumption about this defendant having been a battered woman? Or is the evidence enough that we have here?
But the battered woman syndrome may not have been in the case until the prosecution brought it in by its questioning. And the question is this: should the defense attorney, hearing the cross-examination of the prosecutor into why she didn't do this or why she didn't do that, shouldn't he have then realized that he would need to bring in expert testimony to clarify the reasons that she gave on the stand? Isn't that when it came up in the cross-examination of her by the prosecutor?
The prosecutor was not questioning whether or not she suffered from syndrome.
Of course he wasn't, but he was questioning why she stayed in this relationship and whether or not she was even battered before.
No. If you were not questioning whether or not you saved the relationship, he was questioning whether or not it was like...
So his premise is that it never happened before, and she just went to a closet and got a gun and killed the guy.
And she was, there was something else going on in the relationship. I mean, who knows? You know, it wasn't safe, so it was worth it to show all the brothers and sisters that she was going to get.
The facts in the incident, the shooting incident itself, the prosecution's view was this just isn't a case of self-defense. She's got a gun out of the closet. Was that the way the case was presented? Was that the prosecution's theory?
Well, no, I think the prosecution's theory was that she
you gotta have some sort of theory going in. And she just did went to the closet and decided to blow her husband away, or it's more
possible.
You prosecuted on that kind of...
What was she charged with? What was she charged with? You had to charge her with something.
She was charged with voluntary manslaughter.
That sounds like murder.
I mean, among other things, she was
trying to
attack,
strangle,
you know, there weren't any marks on her neck. She was trying to get the gun went off by accident, and so forth. When exaggerated, she was trying to pull the line. The prosecutor just had reason to believe that there was sufficient provocation in this case that led her to be in fear of a great bodily injury.
Sounds like murder to me.
Why wouldn't she indict it for murder?
Sounds like murder. Why wasn't she indicted for murder? Sounds like she went to the closet, got the gun, and blew him away for no reason whatsoever. And that's not manslaughter to me.
It might have been a problem.
Well, if she was choked, she might have had some reason to go to the closet. I suppose she's being choked and chased.
Mr. Pearson, did you try the case?
No, I didn't.
Who was the defense counsel?
Joseph Solomon. But it seems, however, that to accept the proposition, she came after basically adopt the per se rule that says anytime anybody has been in a relationship with the parents, I would consider a masturbation.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. Mr. Ganso, you used your time, which may take 30 seconds to that. Let me start you off. As you know, we have ineffective assistance of counsel cases all the time, and in other cases, the test for showing and proving ineffective assistance is a pretty high test for a defendant to meet. How is the test, assuming that the lawyer here should have offered an expert, how is the test for ineffective assistance by the man? It's a pretty difficult test to meet. How would you see it met?
It's a very difficult test, Your Honor. It works this way. Because what the prosecutor did by bringing all this up, as you suggested, as the prosecutor brought all this up, it was altogether predictable, expectable, that that's what the prosecutor was going to do. Counsel had to know that was coming, putting on this defense. Failing to look into what the law was, failing to arrange for a response to that when a response was available, is not only not doing your job, but it's prejudicial in the context of this case where the jury struggled to decide whether or not to believe her and failed to do it. And that's the two-prong test for ineffective assistance of counsel.
Would the outcome likely have been different if this testimony had been offered?
The answer is clearly yes.
Counsel, your light's on.
Absolutely.
To go the way you want, does that not leave us with a black letter rule that ineffective assistance of counsel has to, or that the battered woman syndrome has to be presented? presented and an expert offered up in every case where you have fact patterns remotely like this, that there is going to be a discretion for the defense counsel to look at this and say, hey, I think we just muddy the water. We have a strong self-defense defense in this case, and anything else just makes it murky.
I think I've tried to craft the proposition of law fairly narrowly, and I think it is in fact a very narrow case. What we have here is an unusual set of circumstances where not only was the defendant's background filled with ways, filled with a whole set of things that lent themselves to being challenged, and that expert testimony could have explained. But that was, but challenging those things was a crux of the prosecutor's cross-examination, was a predictable crux of the prosecutor's cross-examination. That's a combination that doesn't happen very often. And on the rest of the circumstances of this case, there's no rational reason for not having done it. For not having brought in somebody who could say, this is what we have learned through scientific study. And when there's none of that, when you've got these kinds of facts and no rational reason not to, then it's grassy for us now. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll be advised of our opinion.
Mr. Gass, are you retained in this case?
No.
You're appointed?
Yes.
Thank you.